If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 555. Today, the amateur traveler talks about medieval churches and canals, a star fortress, the 80 Years' War, and the House of Orange, as well as tulips, as we talk about the Netherlands. Welcome to the amateur traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. With no further ado, let's talk about the Netherlands. I'd like to welcome to the show Rachel Heller from rachelheller.org and also from the podcast 1001 Travel Tales. And she's coming to talk to us about northeastern Netherlands. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Rachel and I actually met doing a travel blogger trip. We met on a tour of religious sites of Athens, Greece.
Yes, it was a wonderful tour. Yeah.
Now, Rachel, you do not sound like you are Dutch.
I am Dutch, but I grew up in the States and then moved to Holland with my Dutch husband, as people do.
As people do. Now, you started to say before we started recording this that we were going to talk about Holland, but we're really not. We're talking about the Netherlands.
Right, right. Now, people get very pedantic about this. Holland is actually two of the provinces of the Netherlands, North Holland and South Holland. But generally, people use the term Holland for the whole country. But I don't live in one of the Holland provinces. I live in Groningen province, which is up in the northeast of the country.
And this is an area that people don't know as well as they know of the area, say, around Amsterdam. Why should someone go to this corner of the Netherlands?
Oh, it's beautiful up here. That's basically why you should come here. It's beautiful. It's very flat, but very green. Beautiful farmland. It's quiet. It's not crowded like Amsterdam. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't visit Amsterdam, mind you, because Amsterdam is a wonderful city. I go there as a tourist, but you'll certainly get away from the tourist crowds if you come up to this part of the country.
Okay. And what kind of itinerary would you recommend?
So certainly you'd start in Amsterdam because Amsterdam is beautiful. Then you would go outside of Amsterdam to some of the other sites that are really commonly seen, like Kinderdijk, Zaanseschans. Those are places with really beautiful windmills. I would suggest, though, getting away from the tourists entirely and coming out to this part of the country. Leeuwarden, for example, which is in the province next to Groningen, it's called Friesland, is going to be the cultural capital of Europe next year in 2018. And it's a beautiful place. It's got a wonderful intact center of the city with red brick buildings dating back to the Golden Age. It's wonderful. Now, where I live in Groningen, also has some very pretty sections. It's not quite as intact because of fighting in World War II. But I would certainly recommend coming here just because it's a fun place to be. It's a student city. It's got a big university. there's a beautiful art museum. And then I would suggest getting even more off the beaten track and going out into the Groningen countryside and touring some of these beautiful medieval churches that are scattered about the countryside. The other thing that I always bring visitors to is a place called Bortange, which is over on the border with Germany. And what that is, it's a restored star-shaped fortress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's literally shaped like a star.
Yeah, star-shaped fortress would be after the invention of gunpowder, usually the 1500s or 1600s.
Oh, you're good. Yeah. And it's amazing. If you look it up in Google Maps on satellite view, you'll see what I mean. They've restored it with the original walls, which are not what you picture. They're not stone walls. They're earthen walls.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
With, and
ramparts.
Quite wide. Yeah, they're ramparts. I still picture stone walls for ramparts.
It depends.
These are big earthen walls, and you can walk around the top of the star shape. And from up there, you can look down into this lovely little village that's inside the star, or you can look out and see the remains of the fortifications outside, because it wasn't just one star, but a series of concentric stars with moats. That's just breathtaking. And nobody goes there. I mean, I suppose some people do. I think we get a lot of German tourists from over the border, but Americans never go there. And it's wonderful. So that's what I would say you should do in a week.
Okay.
The Netherlands.
So we've done shows, entire episodes on Amsterdam, but before we go away, is there anything that you think that we may have missed that people should see in Amsterdam? Usually we talk about canal tour, maybe biking around, seeing the Anne Frank house. Anything else we should throw in that people absolutely should see before they leave the city?
Well, if I can put in a blatant plug, I've actually written a whole series of posts about the more obscure museums to see in Amsterdam. I'm up to number 15 and I still haven't covered them all. One of the ones I particularly liked, it's a church in an attic.
And oh, the attic church, yeah.
After, yeah, there's I can't think of the name offhand.
So it's a Catholic church that was built in Amsterdam.
Exactly.
Our Lord in the Attic.
Yes, that's it. Ons Lieve Heer op Zolder, that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into this building and it looks like one of these, you know, golden age buildings. It doesn't look like a church. And you climb up the stairs for several stories and you come out in this really quite magnificent church, which was built up under the roof of this house so that they could worship in secret. It's not visible as a church from the ground, but it is a beautiful church up there. And it's really astounding.
When we say worship in secret, so this was built in the mid-1600s.
Yes.
And usually what happened in this case is that it wasn't so much that none of the neighbors knew that there were Catholic church there, but this is after the 30 Years' War, and people are a little tired of fighting about it. And so you'll find churches like this in Amsterdam that, as long as you're not too obvious that you're Catholic, we're just going to let you be. Or you go to Dusseldorf, just over the border in Germany, and you'll find that you can have a Protestant church, but it can't be seen from the street. You're at that point where people start saying, okay, this is just not worth biting about. Just don't be in our face with it.
Yes. And I did wonder about that, because you go up those stairs and you think, my goodness, this church at the top, this could seat a couple hundred people, I suppose.
Yeah.
You'd think somebody would notice a couple hundred people filing into the side door of this house.
Exactly.
So, yeah, how secret it was, I don't know. But it's a beautiful place. I would recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that pops to mind first. Believe it or not, the prostitution museum is remarkably good.
Okay.
The Red Light Secret, I believe, is what it's called. Again, I'd have to look that title up. But it's obviously in the Red Light District. But it's a very intelligent and respectful presentation of what life is like for prostitutes in the Netherlands.
Okay.
It really made me appreciate the difficulties that they have, even though they are legal. There are some that are not legal, but many are legal. It's not an easy life for them. And it creates some level of empathy and respect.
Interesting. That is not a museum I thought you would choose.
It's well presented. It's not. I thought it would be kind of
Sleazy.
Seedy. Yes, that's the sleazy good word. Yes. And it really wasn't. It was not. Interesting. It was intelligent.
Anything else we want to do in Amsterdam before we head out to where your heart is drawing you out of town?
You know, it's probably been said on other podcasts, but I never get tired of walking around the canal rings.
Oh,
I
sure.
never get tired
Absolutely.
Of that. Just building after building. They're so beautiful. You never get tired of it. And bicycling around them is fun as well, although you don't see as much that way. It's better to just take a really long walk and walk around the rings and just admire the buildings. Oh, there was one other. It's the Canal House Museum. The Canal House Museum shows how they were built originally.
It's the Canal House Museum. Het Grachtenhuis?
Grachtenhaus.
Grachtenhuis?
Grachten, that's it. Grachtenhaus. See? So if you translate it, it's the Canal House Museum, yes.
So I can look them up and you can pronounce them. How does that sound to you?
It's a system. They show how they're built. And that's very interesting. It's interesting to see how those houses, still to this day, are supported on very large poles that are wood that were just sunk into the mud. There's a reason so many of the houses in Amsterdam lean. It's because these poles are sunk into mud, essentially.
Yeah, in many ways, it's built the same way as Venice.
Yes, which also leans.
Right, which also leans, yeah.
But it's part of the charm of Amsterdam, so I quite like it. But Amsterdam's a bit of a victim of its own success. It's so crowded that it's become sort of unpleasant to me anyway. There are other cities trying to lure people away from Amsterdam because of that. Amsterdam's just getting too crowded with so many visitors. So, for example, Rotterdam has been on a big publicity drive to get people to visit Rotterdam. And I would certainly recommend it if you're into modern architecture, because Rotterdam was completely destroyed in the Second World War and had to completely rebuild. So there's some wonderful architecture there, if that's what you're into. So it depends entirely what you like to do. If you like to bicycle, well, that's pretty much anywhere that's not a city is a great place to bicycle because it's flat. You might have to fight the wind, but it's flat. If you like beaches, you like the breezes and sand dunes, go to one of the islands like Texel or Schiermonnikoog. People from here in Groningen tend to go to Schiermonnikoog. It's a beautiful place. And you can walk on beaches that are practically deserted and bicycle through the dunes and really relax up there. So I have lots of suggestions of lots of places you could go.
And going back to your original itinerary, you had mentioned a European capital of culture. And we've talked about that on the show before. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've probably talked about all the recent ones in some episode or another. But explain briefly what that is.
They take turns. They apply to be a European capital of culture. They make the argument for why they're a place that has important cultural aspects to it. And if they get chosen, then they get to be the capital of culture for a year. And Leeuwarden was chosen several years ago and designated to be the capital in 2018. It's not a big town at all. What makes it special is how intact it is. Remember, many cities had significant damage in the war, but Leeuwarden didn't.
In part, it looks like just because it's geographically out of the way.
Exactly. Groningen had damage because it was close to Germany.
Sure.
But Leeuwarden, yeah, it's up there. It's in Friesland. I should add, by the way, that Friesland is unlike the rest of the Netherlands. That Friesland is fiercely independent, I guess you could say. They have their own language, which they're working very hard not to lose. Many primary schools, for example, will now teach either bilingual or trilingually Dutch, Frisian, and English.
And it's another Germanic language, I'm assuming, like Dutch?
It's related to Dutch. Some of the words are the same. It's, I think, actually more closely related to Middle English than to Dutch. If you look at the family trees of languages, it's quite closely related to Middle English. That does not mean you can understand it, because I certainly can't.
Middle English is kind of hard for us to understand nowadays.
Yeah. There's a Frisian identity that is very separate from the Netherlands identity, which isn't to say that they don't speak Dutch and they aren't part of the country. They are, but they're also very independent. So it makes it sort of unique. And Leeuwarden is a particularly beautiful city, I think.
And what things would you recommend we see in Leeuwarden?
Well, for example, there's the Leaning Tower. They have a Leaning Tower, like Pisa, only not so tall. It's basically, they started building this church tower and it started leaning. And so they stopped building it. And it's kind of cute. And it leans. And I quite like it. You can climb up to the top and see the view from the top. It's fun. There's a great museum. It's just the Frisian Museum, I believe it's called. There's the center of town. The old center of town is sort of slightly up a hill, which is what often happened in Dutch town. It's a very flat country. It was, parts of it are below sea level. And so whatever bit of hill was usually where the church would be built and the center of town would be. And many of these hills in this part of the country were actually built hills. They were not originally there. Huh. They're built. And then the church sits on it and the graveyard next to it. And that's about it. In Leeuwarden, it's a bigger hill. I mean, not higher, just wider. And you've got these winding brick roads between these beautiful red brick buildings that date from the 15th or 16th century. They're just beautiful. There's also a Hofje, which I have no idea how to translate that. It's an almshouse.
Okay, almshouse, yeah.
It's an almshouse right next to the old Jewish school. There's an almshouse that is lovely. And you see those in Groningen as well, for that matter, Hofjes, which are just lovely places. You walk in and what they were originally was places for housing the poor, or they were hospitals, or they were widows who were poor. And now they're housing, but they'll have this interior garden that's an oasis in the middle of the city. What's interesting, I don't know how many there are in Leeuwarden. In Groningen, there's something like 12 of them, and none of them got damaged in the war. Other things did, but not them. And you walk in and it's suddenly quiet and it's peaceful and you can sit on a little bench and you can just take a breather. You need to be polite and quiet when you go into Hofjes because they are places where people live. They're not for tourists. But it's usually okay to go into them, peek into them, and take a stroll around in the little garden inside. So I know of one of them in Leeuwarden. There might be more that I'm not aware of. There's a medieval church, quite a large one, there on the hill. There's a Golden Age weighing house. When they used to bring in things like peat that they dug up for fuel or fish that they brought in from the ocean, things would get weighed there in that weighing house in the middle of Leeuwarden. The boats would come up on the canal and things would have to be weighed, of course, for buying and selling. So there's that as well. The canals in Leeuwarden are very narrow and have these sort of bowed bridges over them, which makes them quite picturesque.
Anything else you want us to see in Leeuwarden before we move on?
There's probably more that I can't think of right now.
Okay. Where to next?
Well, the other thing I was recommending was outside of Groningen was both Bourtonga and also some of the medieval churches out in the countryside. For this, you'd really need a car. This is not doable by public transportation.
For all the same reasons that the Netherlands is a good place to bike, it's also a pretty easy place to drive.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you're not driving in Amsterdam itself, get a car at Schiphol, and that's very easy to do.
Exactly. If you got one at Schiphol and did not drive into Amsterdam, you'd be absolutely fine. The roads are excellent here. They're well signposted. They're much smoother than you'll find in the States.
And if you get lost, pretty much everybody speaks English.
Yeah, pretty much everybody speaks English. Exactly. There are these wonderful medieval churches. Every town in the countryside in Groningen province, this probably applies to other provinces too, but in Groningen, each town had a church, of course. Some had two. And the church would be built on a raised bit of land, which is called a terp. And those were often built. They would actually build that bit of land to raise their church up a bit. Or it's what remains of an earlier sort of battlement of some sort that was built there. These earthen walls that they would eventually build the church on top of it. It might have been a protective wall of some sort originally, and then when they didn't need protection anymore, they'd fill it in, they'd build a church on it. But these churches go back to generally 13th, 14th century. So they're Romanesque. Some of them were redone in the Gothic period, so they have Gothic elements as well. And they're just stunning. You drive up to them in the countryside. There's nothing but fields in all directions. And then there's a little raised area with a beautiful red brick church sitting on it. There might be a tree or two. There might be a graveyard. There usually is a graveyard next to it. And many of these you can go inside, and many of them have the remains of old frescoes painted on the inside. And these frescoes are this wonderful sort of primitive style. They didn't have Da Vinci to paint the inside of their churches. They had sure. just some guy who could paint something. And many of these frescoes got painted over during the Reformation because you couldn't have representations. You couldn't have idols. So a lot of it got painted over during the Reformation, but has since been restored and sort of found underneath the plaster that was put over. So you can go into these different churches and see all these wonderful ancient decorative paintwork on the ceilings, on the walls. I love this stuff.
Now, out in the country outside of
Groningen,
I always have trouble. Oh, look at the word. It starts with a G, people. It's not just me.
Groningen. But yes, it's spelled like Groningen.
Yes.
Well,
so how do we find these?
Yeah. I got them in a very old green Michelin that I have, an old green Michelin guidebook, and just started following the route that they suggested. I can name some of them now. Harmerwolde, that starts with a G as well. That one has a separate bell tower, 13th century church, and a separate bell tower that's probably newer. And then it's got these 16th century frescoes inside. I'm just sort of running through the ones that I visited for a post. Stadum has quite a large one, and it was built in the 13th century as well. Loppersum was interesting because Loppersum has these big gravestone slabs on the floor. You know, because the wealthier people would be buried inside the church.
Sure, right.
You know the origin of the term stinking rich?
No, but I just figured it out.
The origin of the term stinking rich, which is also a term in Dutch, Rijke Stinker. They were the ones who could afford to pay to be buried inside, or their families could afford to pay to bury them inside the church instead of out in the churchyard. But they weren't buried terribly deeply, and there would just be this stone slab put on top of them, on top of the grave. And yes, they stank. And that smell of these bodies decomposing would just fill the church. And so they were referred to as the stinking rich. Just thought you needed to know that bit of trivia.
And I like it in Dutch too. And we'll put a link to the post that Rachel is talking about in the show notes, which you can see in the lyrics of this episode as well as on the website.
Okay, thank you.
What else do we want to see in I cannot say the name of this town.
Groningen.
Groningen.
In Groningen, I would say the highlight, well, there's two main highlights in the city itself. One is, again, medieval. It's called the Martinitoren, which is St. Martin's Tower, I guess you would translate it. It doesn't have to do with the drink martini.
Okay, well, that's a little disappointing.
But it's a very tall stone tower that you can climb up and see the view over the city. And I love stuff like that. So that's pretty. And that's right on the central square called the Grote Markt in Groningen. But the other thing is that we have an art museum, a modern art museum called the Groninger Museum, which was built about 20 years ago, I believe. Might have been 25. It's right next to the train station. So if you arrived in town by train, you'd just cross the bridge to it. And this is a postmodern gem. Just for a bit of contrast from all the medieval stuff. And the building is postmodern in that it was designed by three different architects in three different pieces that don't really seem to fit together, and yet somehow it works. And it's built in the middle of a canal. So you cross a bridge to get to it. You cross a bridge on the other side to go into town. And it often, it has exhibits that change regularly, of course. So you'd have to look up what's on show at that particular time. But even its permanent collection, there's some wonderful pieces in there. But the building itself is worth seeing. It's worth seeing just to go into the lobby, for that matter, even if you didn't want to pay the admission fee to go see the art. It's an amazing museum. People come here just to see that museum, either for what's in it or for the building itself.
One comment I wanted to make is that you mentioned that the cathedral was in the Grote Markt Square. And I wanted to mention that when you're in the Netherlands, anytime you see that M-A-R-K-T, that's a market square. So do they still have markets in the market square?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's another market right next to it in Kronion called the Fischmarkt, which was originally where they sold and traded fish. But now they have all the vegetable and the fruit markets, fruit stalls and the fish stands and poultry and all of that on the Fischmarkt right next door. And then on the Grote Markt, they have a lot of things like clothing. Oh, and there's something that anybody who goes to a market in the Netherlands needs to look for and buy. And that's something called the stroopwafel. I know you haven't asked about food yet, but you got to have a stroopwafel. Now, stroopwafels you can buy in a supermarket. And basically what it is it's a sort of very thin waffle cookie. It's round. And there's two of them. And then in between is a sort of syrupy caramel sauce. And the ones you buy in the supermarket are hard. The caramel is hardened. But in a marketplace, they're making those waffles fresh. And they're pouring on the syrup, the caramel, while it's hot, and making the sandwich. And it is heaven. So if you go to the market in Groningen, get a stroopwafel.
And you've taken us in the direction of food. Any other foods we should get while we're in the market or while we're in general in Netherlands?
The Netherlands isn't exactly known for its haute cuisine, I have to say.
It's got good cheese. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I was going to say that. The cheese is definitely worth getting. Take some home. Everybody loves Gouda in the States. I always bring them some when I go there to visit. Gouda is...
Again, starting with a G.
Yeah, it's called Gouda. And pretty much all the cheese is what we would call Gouda in America, is what they just call cheese here. The way you can tell the different kinds is that if it says oud, O-U-D, that means old. And old means it's been aged more and it's going to be much more crumbly and it's going to be much sharper. And if it says jong, which is J-O-N-G, then it's quite mild. Jong, you know, tastes practically like butter. And then you have a range in between. So you have jong and oud, and in between would be belegen, which is, well, halfway between young and old. It's middle-aged. And you'll have various gradations between them as well. But that's good to know, you know, just to read the label to know which strength of cheese you're getting. And then you can get different. It's essentially the same kind of cheese, but it will have things in it. So you could get cheese with nettles in it that adds a certain flavor to it, or cheese with cloves, I think it is, that they use, or cheese with mustard in it, and so on. So yes, the cheeses are pretty good. Although the stroopwafels, I'd choose that anytime. As far as meals go, I mean, the traditional Dutch food is very hearty, filling food with potatoes and pork and greens like kale and carrots, lots of carrots. The other thing is pannenkoeken, which are pancakes. And that's a fun meal to have there. Often for some reason, I have no idea why this is so. In many cities, the pancake place is on a ship.
Okay.
No idea why. Yeah. Pannenkoek ship. I know there's one in Leeuwarden. I know there's one in Groningen. Don't know about Amsterdam. But pancakes here are not like pancakes in the States. They're thinner. They're much larger. And you really can usually just eat one, because what they do is they'll put savory things on it. So you could choose to have one. My favorite is with mushrooms and bacon. And so it's your main course.
So more like a savory crepe.
Yeah, it's like a savory crepe. It's a different texture than a crepe, though, than the ones they do in France. And it's certainly got more food on it than the ones in France.
And different texture. It's not like a Breton buckwheat crepe, for instance. It's still regular flour.
It's chewier than that.
Okay.
It's chewier than that. Yeah, it's regular flour, but it's somehow a bit chewier. And these are very filling. But it's fun because you get to go on the inside of a ship to eat them.
Sounds like something you can easily sell to the kids. Let's go on a ship and eat pancakes.
Oh, yeah. Very popular with children. Well, pancakes in general are popular with children, aren't
sure,
they?
Sure, right.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, what some people do, if they really can fit it in, is they also get a sweet one after, which is the same kind of pancake, only then it'll have syrup on it. Not maple syrup. They don't do that very much here. It's a sort of sugar syrup. They do grow sugar beets here. So the syrup is, I guess you'd call it what they call corn syrup in the state, or golden syrup.
Okay.
That's what's usually put on it if it's a sweet pancake. And they're good. They're good. So those are the things you should eat.
Okay.
Yeah. Pancakes, cheese, stroke waffles.
And where are we going to go next? Or are there more things to see? Oh, good. Then I don't have to keep saying Groningen.
Okay. Bortanga is the thing that, as I said, I always take visitors to because it's so unknown and yet it's so gorgeous.
And this is the Star Fortress.
This is the star-shaped fortress right on the border with Germany that was originally meant to be part of the defensive system at the border with the Netherlands. And you go there, there's a parking lot for visitors, which I've never seen full, by the way. And you have to walk a ways. This is not a place to go if you're not good at walking, because you do have to walk a ways to actually get to the town itself, to the village itself. And there's something like 50 people live inside there. It is a place where people live, but you can also rent a place and stay overnight, which would be lovely, I think. So Bortanga, it had to do with the 80 Years' War, which happened starting in 1566 and went into the 1600s, which was a revolt against the Spanish, because believe it or not, the Spanish used to rule the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Habsburgs.
Yeah. And so this part of the country was particularly resistant to Spanish rule. And the Spanish had these supply lines that went across the border into what is now Germany. So there's this guy, Prince Willem of Orange, who was leading the revolt against Spain, and he wanted to disrupt the supply lines. And so he built these forts. And now in this place, it was the border at the time was mostly marshland. And there were certain places you could pass where the ground was solid. And so those were the places where he built the string of forts. And so Bortanga was one of those forts. And it's star-shaped because, of course, it's easier to defend that way. You can station people out on the points of the stars, and they have a full view of every bit of wall, you see. So it's very easy to defend. And Bortanga never actually saw any fighting. And the marshlands got dried up because they were farmed. So channels were dug in order to drain the water out of them. And so it wasn't particularly usable as a fort.
And for Americans or British people, just to tie this into your history, his grandson becomes William, King of England. And if you're in the U.S. and you go to Williamsburg, that's named after him, or William and Mary College, and that's named after he and his wife. So that's all tied together with this person who becomes a Protestant king in England because it's a Protestant area, and that's one of the reasons they're rebelling against Spain.
Right, exactly. Thank you. You're good on the history. Anyway, so the point is that, you know, it sort of fell into disuse. Parts of it were dismantled. They took building materials for other places and so on. And then at some point in the 20th century, they decided to rebuild it and renovate it. And it's become now sort of an open air museum. But at the same time, you know, people live there. People have lived there all along. So it's a combination of both. Lovely cobblestone streets. These big fortifications around the outside allow you to walk around the outside and look down into this village with these fortifications. There's a central square marked Platz, you know, like you said, marked, where one of the restaurants serves pannekuchen, pancakes. You can sit outside if the weather's good, eat your pancakes.
Not on a boat, though.
Not on a boat, no, no.
I would hold out for the boat.
There's also a barracks that you can tour. The most interesting building to me is synagogue there. There used to be a small Jewish community there, obviously before the war. It's this one, well, really two-room synagogue that has been restored to its original use, to its original makeup. And it is now occasionally still used for services, but mostly it's just a museum of sorts about the small Jewish community that used to live there. But it's a lovely little synagogue. It's tiny. It's really tiny. And they have periodically over the year these events as well where they'll reenact wars, reenact battles from the 1600s, for example. And you can sit up on the ramparts and watch these reenactments, which were very slow. I have to say, battling in the 1600s was a very slow process because they would shoot. And then they'd have to reload the gun. And it could take a whole minute before they could shoot it again. So there's all this smoke and smell from the smoke while they're busy frantically trying to load the thing again so they can get one more shot off and then another minute before they can shoot again. So they were very slow affairs, I think.
Well, and people shouldn't be all that surprised by that because we're talking about the age of the musketeer. And you remember they carry swords, and the reason for that is after a while it just gets pointless to try and reload that musket again.
That musket, right. You're going to say, wait, stop for a minute. Hang on. I have to refill my musket. It's not going to happen.
No, you need a sword to protect yourself in between.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly efficient.
Well, and you also get a bunch of people with their big pikes protecting the musketeers.
Yes. And so they reenacted that whole sort of scene. They reenact these things once or twice a year. And of course, at Christmas, they have a market on the market square with all sorts of lovely sort of traditional kind of handicraft. There's a windmill as well. There's a captain's house you can tour. But really, what's enjoyable is just the strolling around, taking in the atmosphere. The last time I was there was in the spring with a friend of mine from America. And the gardens that some people have planted outside their houses are lovely. We just wandered around and looked at the flowers. Remember, Holland is a wonderful place for flowers. Tulips in particular.
Especially in the spring, but I don't think of this region as being the region where you would go to see the tulips.
No. The place that's known for the tulips is the place around, well, the famous place everybody goes is called Kokenhof, which is in the west, and it's in the middle of the area where most of the tulips are grown for export. And the fields are beautiful. Kokenhof is basically an agricultural show focusing on tulips and other bulb plants. And so if you go to Kokenhof, I definitely recommend it if you're here in end of March, April, beginning of May, depending on the year. Their opening dates and closing dates vary depending on the weather. But certainly worth going because it's just magnificent. And the sheer quantity of different types of tulips. I never knew there were that many types of tulips till I went to Kokenhof. And they've got them all planted in pretty borders and bright, colorful combinations of flowers and so on. It's lovely to go there. The reason that it's there is that that's the part of the country where they grow the tulips for export. And so the fields are just jaw-droppingly beautiful. Great photographic opportunities. Stop by the side of the road and take pictures of these fields because there'll be a huge strip of just yellow tulips and then another strip of just orange and another strip of just red and so on. Brilliant, brilliant colors. And what's nice is that because what they actually sell is mostly not the flower, but the bulbs.
Yeah, sure.
They have to just plant the bulbs, let them flower, let the flowers go, and then eventually they dig up the bulbs. So that means you have, you know, a couple weeks of beautiful fields while they're letting the tulips age and die again before they dig up the bulbs.
If you want to add that in to this trip, it's in the wrong direction, but it's also only 18 minutes from the airport. So you could pick up your rental car, go see that, and then head up to where we've been talking about.
I've been jumping around the country a bit, haven't I? Yeah.
Yes, but it's a small country. You can get there in 45 minutes by bus.
But what got me to that was the tulips and the flowers. And the thing is that you're going to see them everywhere in the country if you're here that time of year. The tulips are grown everywhere in everybody's gardens. The Dutch are big gardeners. There's tulips everywhere. So you don't have to be at Kokenhof to see tulips. It's just there if you want to go there, if you really want to focus on tulips, yes. But tulips are everywhere. And then after tulips, it's some other plant. There's flowering plants everywhere. Right now, today it's the 13th of March, the crocuses are up. And I don't think anybody bothers actually planting them anymore because they just grow everywhere. Seriously, the median on the road just around the corner from me, I just noticed it yesterday when I was bicycling by, it's the space, the green strip between the bicycle path and the driving path has a whole carpet of purple crocuses blooming on it. They just grow there every year. Nobody plants them. They're just there. And on the corner of our street, there's this one section of, you know, public land. It's a bit of green on the corner that I assume is public land. I don't think it belongs to anybody, where a huge number of daffodils come up every year. So those will be up in a few weeks as well. So there's always something like that. Just in everywhere along the edges of the road.
Another thing we should say about the Netherlands, for people who haven't been there, is a very clean country, a very, very clean country,
yes.
As in Dutch clean. It actually is a saying in the U.S., although it doesn't get used that much anymore. But there's a level of clean that is yes. different from any other country I've been to, I think. Northern Germany also has a level of precision. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it being small. So we're talking about the area way the heck up in northeastern Netherlands. And it's an hour and a half, basically, to the nearest city from the airport. We're not doing a lot of driving.
No, it's not a lot of driving. Groningen is about 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I was doing about an hour and a half to Leeuwarden.
Yes, yes, Leeuwarden's closer. Yeah. So we're not talking a big country here.
Right.
If you walk in a city, if you go to, for example, Leiden, which is also a beautiful city, or Delft,
mm-hmm.
doesn't matter, any city, and you walk along the sidewalk, you'll see the houses are, at least in the city centers, the houses are right up against the sidewalk. There's no front yards or anything. You can just peer right into people's windows. People leave their drapes open.
Hmm.
And it's perfectly, I don't think it's particularly polite to go peering into people's houses, but people are not shy. People do not close the curtains until night, until it gets dark out. And that is part of that cleanliness, because you're saying it's a very neat and clean place. And that's absolutely true. And that's true inside the houses as well.
And I'll bet those windows have been washed recently too.
Unlike
the office I'm sitting here in my house, where I need to get around to that once a year.
Yes, and unlike mine, I mean, we chose a house that wasn't right on the sidewalk on purpose, because I didn't want people staring in and feeling like I always had to have it be clean all the time. But the fact is, people are tidy, and it's partly because it's a very crowded country. And so people don't necessarily have a lot of room. So you have to keep clean if you're having to sort of deal with other people around you. And if the city is crowded, people want it to work well so that people don't irritate other people. So you have, yeah, very tidy traffic. There's a lane for the cars, and there's a place for parking, and there's a lane for bicycles. And people stick with that, if you see what I mean.
Yep.
It's a tidy place. Having said that, bicycles are not always so good about. People riding bicycles don't always follow the rules, I must say. They get a little assertive on bicycles. Anybody who's visited Amsterdam and gotten on a bike, had people dinging their bells at them a lot, will recognize that. The Dutch don't want anybody to slow them down when they're on a bike. So they get very cross if you slow them down. You need to be a little careful about it.
Anything else we want to talk about before we get into my overview questions and start wrapping this up?
One of them would be, if you like to see sort of natural scenery, there's a place right smack in the middle of the country called the Hoge Veluwe, which is a national park, and it's lovely. It's woods. They've got even little hills there, unlike most of the rest of the country. You can take a white bicycle, and it's essentially renting it for free, and bicycle around the park or take nice strolls through the woods. It's just a very pretty, restful, natural place. And there's a museum in it called the Kroller Mulder Museum that I'd certainly recommend, especially their sculpture garden. It's a modern art museum, and they have a lovely sculpture garden for strolling on if the weather's good. I already mentioned the islands as well. In particular, I like Schiermonnikoog, which is the right-hand end of the string of islands in the Waddenzee.
Okay.
Above Holland. And it's just a pretty place with sand dunes and bicycling around the sand dunes. And Groningers, people from this town, will go there for a weekend for a break just to relax. And then the other one that I would recommend is the Zuiderzee Museum in Enkhuizen. And that is, I just really enjoyed that one. Now, I have to explain the history on this one, because if you look at a map of Holland, you'll see there's this big sort of lake in the middle that's called the IJsselmeer.
Okay.
However, there's a saying, God built the world, but the Dutch built the Netherlands. Have you heard that saying before?
Yes.
The IJsselmeer used to be part of the ocean.
Right.
It used to be the Zuiderzee, it was called. And it used to be a lot bigger than it is now. The Netherlands actually built an entire province that's called Flevoland. They were going to build another one too, but the environmentalists stopped that. The Zuider Zee became the IJsselmeer when they built this big dike across the top of it called the Afsluit Dike. And basically that lets some water through when it's needed because boats need to come in and out. But other than that, it stays closed and it's meant to protect the country from any more big floods. There was a huge flood in the 1950s that killed a bunch of people. And so it was built as part of that effort. Actually, I'm not sure about that. The Afsluit Dike might be older than that. In any case, the IJsselmeer is now more or less fresh water, whereas it used to be salt water. Now, the reason I'm bringing all that up is that there also used to be a whole fishing culture around the Zuider Zee.
Okay.
These villages that were based on fishing for a living. And so what happened was they've created a museum in Enkhuizen about the Zuider Zee and what things were like when the Zuider Zee was the Zuider Zee. So what they've done is they've moved some of these historic buildings from around what is now the IJsselmeer and put them together as a museum town, an open air museum in Enkhuizen. And so you can go into these buildings and see what they were like and see how people lived as fishermen. So this isn't the fancy houses you could tour in Amsterdam where rich people lived. This is like the little guy. This is the fisherman and how he lived and his family lived in the old days around the old Zuider Zee. They also demonstrate crafts and so on. You can taste smoked fish that was just smoked right there in the traditional way, that sort of thing. And I really like that. And then the other thing, have you ever heard of the Elfstedentocht?
No.
Now we're moving back up to Friesland again.
Okay.
Friesland is where the Elfstedentocht happens. And that means the 11 cities tour, or I should say 11 cities race. What that used to be was a skating race that went through 11 villages around Friesland. And it's about 200 kilometers long, which is 120 miles or so. The thing is that it doesn't freeze enough for this race to happen anymore. It used to freeze. I mean, the canals would freeze and you could skate from town to town. The last time it happened was 1997. And then the time before that was 1986 and 1985. And then before that, it was in 1963. So you can see it doesn't happen very much, but they hope every single year they hope. But those little towns of the 11 cities race are lovely little towns. And what many people do now is they bicycle. You get a bicycle and you bicycle from town to town for fun. But then if you're like me and you don't like to bicycle that much, you take a car and you drive from town to town. And that's enjoyable too. That's a nice look at the countryside and farm towns and so on with canals running through them. So that's another thing I recommend.
And the only reason I know about the canals freezing over is Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates.
Okay, you know that that's an American story, not a Dutch
No.
story.
No.
Okay. When I first got here and I asked people about that, they were like, who's Hans Brinker? they'd never heard of the guy. And the little boy with his finger in the dike? Nope. Mm-hmm. Nope. Doesn't happen. Didn't happen. Not a story here at all. And that's from the same book, actually.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's actually a story within the story in the book, Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates, that was written by some woman from, whose name I don't remember, of course, from Boston.
Well, we need to start wrapping this up. You and I will get a chance to speak to each other at the TBEX conference up in Israel that's coming up here quickly. You're standing in the prettiest spot. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think I'd have to say Bortanga. You're standing on the wall of Bortanga looking down into the village.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Netherlands.
I'd say something about the bicycles. When you nearly get run over by a bicycle, that's only in the Netherlands because it happens all the time. Look both ways before you step onto the street. That's all I can say.
And finish this thought. You really know you're in the northeastern portion of the Netherlands when what?
When you speak Dutch, but you suddenly can't understand what the person talking to you is saying because they're speaking Frisian.
If you had to summarize this region in three words, what three words would you use?
How many words is off the beaten path?
Too many.
Off beaten path.
Okay. Excellent. Our guest again has been Rachel Heller from rachelheller.org. And also again, let's plug 1001 Tales, which is a relatively new travel podcast. You might want to check that out. Rachel, we've mentioned a couple other posts that we're going to link to. Any other posts you've written recently about the area we're talking about that we should call people's attention to?
I have another post as well that's just about Groningen itself and sort of sets out a walking tour that you could do in Groningen in a day.
Perfect.
To sort of see all the highlights in Groningen. So that would be the obvious one to...
Yeah, we'll put a link to that on the show notes as well. And remember, the show notes can be found in the lyrics of this episode right here in your podcast player. Rachel, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for the Netherlands.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
In News of the Community, some shows are a little harder to edit than others. And if I ever meet with you, as I just did recently with Nur, who is a listener of the show and a guest on the show, did the episode about visiting Victoria Falls so many years ago, met with him for the first time when I was in Jerusalem. If we have dinner like that or coffee, ask me about a show like this and why it was harder. For those of you who are interested in amateur traveler trips, we have the trip still planned to India in November, but it's also time to start thinking about what to do next year in 2018. And that discussion will be happening in the Facebook group. Just go to amateurtraveler.com/trips and ask to join that private group. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Join the mailing list to hear all the up-to-date news, and thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.